Good to see you guys. Y'all come on in. Miss Peggy, you're not supposed to be here. I thought you were already traveling. I'm sorry. Yeah. I mean, we prefer to see you. Good to see you. Good to see all of you. Okay, so you know I like class participation, and I hope to have some of that, but I've got quite a bit to go through. Whenever I did a study on qualifications for elders, I took 16 weeks. Where we're at right now at North Collin is the elders received your feedback, and they are recommending us seriously consider deacons. In other words, they feel that there's a need, but they are putting the ball in your court for you to consider your own feedback, their recommendation. And now my job as a minister is to teach on this. So I'm going to talk about the qualification for deacons. So, and before I forget, so what is all of this going to look like? Listen, today I'm just going to talk about 1 Timothy chapter 3. We're going to look at Acts chapter 6. And then the shepherds will follow up later on. Is that fair enough, Rod, Billy? There'll be a follow-up with this. Again, I want to reiterate, this is not about them saying this is what we're doing. They're saying this is a recommendation. We see a need for it, but what about you? My position is, what does the Bible say regarding deacons? I just want to be super clear about where we're at. And obviously, Rod, Billy, if any time, if y'all need to interject, do that. But because there's a lot I have to cover, you give me the time to get through it, and then hopefully we'll have time later on, and then I can open it up. And I didn't want to do this in a sermon format, because number one, this gives me more time, and hopefully time for you to give some feedback. Okay, so it's kind of like, when we talk about worship, there's a sense in Romans 12 to where everything that you do that God is expecting of you is your spiritual worship. But then there's also the concept of, clearly in the Bible, you come together to pay homage to God. And we can, it's more clearly defined. Why am I saying that? Because there's a way in which we are all servants, right? We agree with that. We are all to serve, and we're going to talk about that in this morning's sermon. But there's a special way in which the Bible indicates that there are a group of servants that are to be qualified. So in Philippians, whenever Paul writes to the church, he also addresses the elders, plural, and the deacons. Okay, so now we've got a special class of individuals. And that's why we're in 1 Timothy 3, because 1 Timothy 3 is the only passage that gets into the, and we use this word, it's not in the text, the qualifications for deacons. I understand studies like this can make people nervous. It's been said before, these passages aren't about disqualifying people. It's not meant to be, you know, looked at in a negative way. But it's setting the, what is Timothy about? It's about setting the household of God up, because it's how we're to function and what Timothy needed to know. That's like, I think, the main theme that you're going to see in the letter, how you should behave in the household of God. Within that passage, he's going to talk about elders. And by the way, I'm not, again, because I have limited time, there's actually a kind of a cool structure to it. It's going to talk about the overseer being above reproach, and then it has a few things that are in the positive. In other words, they should be this. By the way, we learn that they're supposed to be able to teach. Whenever you're talking about elders, it's the only thing in that passage that tells us what they do. Kind of interesting, just as a side note. And then it balances it out, and it talks about things that they are not to be. And then it's going to give us the purpose. Because if these men aren't this way, and if they can't manage their household well, how are they going to help a local fellowship? And then we get into our text for today. Deacons, likewise. And I see some common structure in this as well. So we're beginning in verse 8. deacon likewise must be dignified, or the idea of honorable, honest. Anyone else have a different translation? Reverent. And what I think Paul is doing is he's using, again, a big term, which is going to be an umbrella term, which is understood by the following. Like, how are they reverent? How are they honorable? How are they dignified? And then we're going to have three things in the negative. Okay, so I'm reading from the ESV. They are not to be double-tongued, not addicted to much wine, not greedy for dishonest gain. Double-tongued. So this concept, of course, the first thing I thought about was like James chapter 3. And after he talks about teachers, he's also going to go into this idea that you can't have fresh and salt water coming out of the same mouth. And a lot of this has to do with the character. When you're talking about someone that's going to deal with people, he can't be saying one thing to you and something opposite to someone else with that idea of trying to deceive. This has got to be an honest person. Now, you may not like what they have to say, and they've got to be courageous enough to say what they need to say. This is many times why we get double-tongued people. So I'm going to say one thing here and another thing over here. We can't do that. And I'm going to emphasize this again as we go along, because when you're dealing with people, we need to know that we're dealing... You shouldn't be asking the question, well, who am I speaking to today? Okay? They are not to be addicted to much wine. Okay, again, we like to get into the whole wine discussion. So I'm just going to give you the long short of it, where Sean Briggs is at on this. First of all, I don't think that the language is saying, let me put it this way. I don't think that this verse alone is proof and the positive to drink intoxicating wine, because I'm also not to be overly wicked. I don't think I can be a little wicked, okay? So one of the things I'm having to do is consider discussion. Also, just as a side note, knowing the background and the culture and some of the things that they were facing. So in that culture, they were known for gluttony, and they would drink, whether it was intoxicating or not, wine in their culture. And it was mostly tied to gluttony, okay? Though it could also be intoxicating. And a wine is a whole other discussion. Whenever the Bible was translated in 1611, it's been translated wine, because wine, going back in our English, was always intoxicating or not. Oenos, that's what the Greek word is. Well, then how do I know which one it is? The context will tell. But guys, here's the point. You need someone that's not drinking the Kool-Aid culturally, and you need someone who is of sober mind. And that's the point I think we need to get. This isn't a discussion of, but are you saying all the wine never had any type of degree of fermentation? No, I get it. Believe me, I get it. Get the point. Not addicted to much wine. They are not to be greedy for dishonest gain. And I think all of these are especially important, because when you're helping people, and when you're helping people in the physical realm, guys, think about this. In the physical realm, you don't want a leader who is greedy for dishonest gain. And think about the people they could be dealing with. The helpless, the weak. So no, I need you to be an honest person. I need you to be a sober mind and about God's business and not like the world. And I need to know that if you're in my home or I'm talking to you, I don't have to keep a close eye on you. Is that fair enough? They are to, and now if we will read this together, verse 9, they must hold the mystery of the faith with a clear conscience. So the mystery of the faith, and this is Paul writing this, Paul will use this term, and the mystery of the faith is this, that God's salvation goes out to everyone. So also, let me remind, so this is a person that also, whenever he's dealing with people, understands that the gospel is for everyone. I don't think, what the passage is about, but I'm just saying coincidentally, God is no respecter of persons. A deacon doesn't need to be either. He understands that the mystery of the faith is for everyone. And he holds that. And let me say this. If he holds it, it also means that he knows it. You can't hold on to what you are ignorant of. But he does it also with a clear conscience. Listen, we can all be hypercritical. I know there are times where we can look at our lives and we can say, I need to do better here. I mean, show me a hand where someone doesn't need to do better. I get that. But putting that to the side, you should know, are you standing in the faith or not? And if such a person cannot answer that, if they can't look at themselves and answer confidently and say, no, I hold to the faith, my conscience is clear, then we need to encourage that person to build their faith, but they're not ready for this, okay? Again, this isn't about being hypercritical. It's about having people that are going to help the congregation, and you got to get this one right, or else it could really affect negatively the body. And let them first be tested. Also, let them first be tested, then let them serve as deacons if they prove themselves blameless. Okay? So, it's been said before, no problem in repeating this. This is not the time to look at someone that you wish could really find some conviction in the Lord and they go, you know what? Let's give them a roll. And maybe that'll get them going. Nope. Too late for that. Again, we're not your experiment. Can't do that. Well, how are they tested? I don't think there's anything wrong with us giving men opportunities to do things and maybe taking them under the wing. But I also think part of this is that they're being tested and that we're discussing what it is that we're seeing. But let them first be tested. Can I tell you what I think a real practical thing is? We need people that are already doing the work. You know, I say this lightheartedly, but if we worshiped with one of you for 15 years and all of a sudden you said, I'm leaving, I'm going to go preach the gospel. And we're like, we've never even heard you say anything before. Realistically, that's not going to happen. Someone that's in the Word, they love it, they're hungry and thirsty for it, they talk about it, and they're already teaching. If we had someone that says, yeah, I'm going to go preach, we would probably be going, well, that saw that one coming. So if you have someone that's not around, if you have someone, and this is tricky, right? Because the nature of serving isn't always obvious. So I also want to be very clear about this. But what I'm saying is that this person doesn't need to be a surprise. Is that fair to say? They've been tested. We understand. Let's continue on. Again, I've just got so much to get through, guys. Wives are to be dignified. Your translation also may say women likewise, because the Greek, it there's no Greek for wives or Greek for women, okay? And so women likewise or wives, because many times it's translated wives because they're saying they believe clearly from the context. It's the wives of these individuals. But we're focusing on them are to be dignified. You know what I thought was really interesting about this? Is that it really answers to the qualifications of the men. It's like the other side of the coin. So men are not to be double-tongued and their wives are to be dignified. Okay? Oh, dignified using that same umbrella term. And then what specifically does that look like? Well, so this dignified man who isn't supposed to be double-tongued, the wife is to be dignified and not a slanderer. The husband's not to be addicted to much wine, and the woman's supposed to be sober-minded. The guy's not to be greedy, right, for dishonest gain, and the wife needs to be faithful in all things. Why do you think that's the case? Why are we talking about her? Okay, very good.
She needs to be a helper to him, and they need to serve one another in that way. You see that reflected in how they interact.
And I think this is true of our shepherds' wives as well. Listen, guys, there are going to be times, so I'm don't act shocked. There are going to be times that the elders It may be something they can't share with their wives. But let me tell you, their wives are involved. And if you're like, what? Yeah, then I'm going to be like, come on. I mean, their wives are involved. And they're helping them through this. And I also would say that, again, pay attention to who you're married. Pay attention. I'm going to get you later, bud. I got too much to go through. We'll come back to it later on. I'm going to try to get through this. Pay attention to who you're marrying. Because when we're, I'll put it this way. For me, if I'm just being totally transparent, I'd rather say this openly and privately. Depending on who you marry, that may pull some consideration of who you are to me as a person who makes decisions. Well, that's not me, that's my wife. Right, and you married her. Now, I'm going to consider a lot of things, but I'm also looking as to who you are right now. But the bottom line is, if at that point we can't look at your wife and trust her and the support that she's going to be, that's going to be problematic. So here's the other thing. If your wife's not trustworthy and you're here trying to help the brethren in a physical way, and I know that she's got your ear, do you see what I'm saying? I need to know that she's not a slanderer. I need to know that she isn't physical driven. I need to know that she has a sound mind. The husband of one wife. So here we go. Verse 12. Let deacons each be the husband of one wife, managing their children and their households well. So here's the whole one wife controversy. So the two big ones are the husband of one wife and the believing children in 1 Timothy 3 earlier with the elders. And I've spent 16 weeks. I've got no problem telling you where I'm at. First of all, I'm sympathetic to a lot of the different views on this one. But when I'm looking at a totality of what we're dealing with, I think we are clearly looking at the character of the person. You know, we talk about the Greek. It's a one woman man. So we add additional English words to try to make the phrase make sense. The husband of one wife. The Greek is a one-woman man. Okay? Does it mean that he... So here are the big questions. Like, he can only be married once before? Well, it doesn't say having been the husband of one wife. Well, what about 1 Timothy 5 later on? The widow. Having been... And that one's a one-woman, a one-man woman. Okay? So having been is in some of the looks like, or in some of the manuscripts and others. That's why the NASB puts it in italics. Of course, she's a widow, so the husband's dead. And then they even debate the having been, if it refers to having become 60 or having been this woman. When you look at the text, it's her character. But if she were faithful to her husband, she was, I believe, a one-man woman. I believe that we're looking at faithfulness, in other words, what I'm saying. Is this person faithful to their spouse? Because the thing is that if their spouse had died and married again, even from a numerical standpoint, I'd say, well, they are a one-woman man. Can we also consider the fact that polygamy was a thing during then? Some people think, well, you want to get real technical, the most obvious thing is literally they can't have more than one wife. Well, you can't throw that out. That's true. So we're all considering, and by the way, this stuff gets so fun, let me tell you. I hate these studies. Well, if that's the case, it can't be talking about polygamy, because then what are you implying, that someone else can be a polygamist? No more than someone else could be a drunkard. It's okay for you to have fits of anger, but not an elder. Okay, so let's stop with the silliness. You want them to be faithful. And because guess who they're going to be dealing with? Yeah, so anyone in a leadership position or anyone in a counseling position, you need to understand the position you are in. When you're dealing with women who are hurt and vulnerable, and I know it sounds brutal to say, but sometimes it's easy pickings. It's happened to a lot of good people in the church. We need to know that their eyes are where they need to be, that they are managing their children and their households well. So we've got the not, and then we have but the what we do want them to do. We don't want them to be double-tongued. We don't want them to be addicted to much wine. We don't want them to be greedy for dishonest gain. We do want them to be faithful. We do want them to manage their children and households. And I want to emphasize this well. Managing, which tells you they're going to be married and they have kids, okay? And I think also implied that their kids need to be old enough to where we can tell they manage them. Does that make sense? I think that's a reasonable observation. Managing well is more than just saying, don't do this. Managing well is more that you tell me my kids aren't in check. Because there are a lot of dictators. And that doesn't mean they're managing their home well. It just means they get people to tell them what they want to do. Guys, I know this should be so common sense, but remember this. The day comes when there's a need, these men are going to be among you. Do you want to encounter them? There's an easy way to say it. Like, do you want them to have authority and in charge in those areas? Or are you going like, just let him do his thing, but like, don't get cross with him. Or like, oh yeah, he's going to get it done for sure. Because he's going to come in swinging at everybody. You see what I'm saying? So here's the thing. If he can't get his house in order, he has no business trying to manage you. And that's the same point for the elders. Is that fair to say? I love this passage. For those who serve well as deacons gain a good standing for themselves. And I don't think that Paul is at all saying try to get into it for this reason. But he's saying one of the blessings is that men who serve in such a way, if they do it right, the people among them will honor them. And they have a good standing among the people. And you know what? That's a beautiful thing. That's what Paul is pointing out. And he also says, and also great confidence in the faith that is in Christ Jesus. You know, 1 John will talk about this as well, but one of the ways that we do have confidence in our salvation is not that we are trying to merit our salvation, but that we can look at our lives and see that the fruit of true conversion is alive when we serve people. And I think that deacons are able to look and say, what a beautiful honor that is bestowed on me. The love and the support of the brethren, and also the fact that when I go to bed at night, I'm reminded, like, I'm in the faith. I'm following Jesus. It's a beautiful thing. I'm getting through this. Believe me, I want your comments. I just, there's a lot to hit. So really quickly, I asked this question, what is the focus? And I'm going to quickly follow up with this question. What work do they do? Do you notice that in this text, it doesn't mention their work at all? Think about that. This text doesn't tell us anything about what they do. So, this is interesting. Because I'm going to get to Acts chapter 6. I believe Acts chapter 6 is an early picture of what would later be called deacons. But even if I didn't have Acts chapter 6, what are some things that we can conclude? So I'm leading the witness. Do we need a deacon to pass out the newsletter? Well, you're laughing. Why? Why don't we need a deacon to pass out newsletters? If I know nothing about what they do, I know that a deacon is based in the term servant. It just to serve, and I get that. So we can, Kelly? Well, for a minute, let's just pretend like Acts 6 doesn't exist.
I can be effective at handing out bulletins and not have any of those qualifications.
Does everyone agree with that? Matter of fact, could a kid do that? Hey, by the way, do you think it may be a good idea to get our kids to pass out that? So then what's the point I'm trying to make? Whatever it is that they're doing, it needs to be evident as to why we need them to do that work. Does that make sense? I was reading an article, and to be fair, I've been saying this for a while now, where this guy, and it's not just, I'm just not being some young know-it-all curmudgeon, an older seasoned man said, for most churches, if you took a building away, they wouldn't understand the need for a deacon. I've been saying that for quite a long time now. We have building deacons. That's not a biblical thing. We don't need qualified men to do majority of the things that I have seen deacons do. I want you to think about that. So this is calling for a serious enough situation that we have these qualified men. Yes, Billy.
The phrase that Rod and I get around is it requires spiritual discernment.
So with that, guys, who should we be looking for? Okay, and at this point, it's kind of rhetorical. We should not be looking for, we're looking for men of character. The text doesn't even get into what they do. Well, this guy's really gifted at this, so we got to find a job for him. Nope. Because here's the deal, we're going to Acts 6, and as I read through this, I've got a kind of lighthearted question. How many times do you think these men had faced this situation before? Okay, so let's get into Acts chapter 6. I don't have a problem calling these guys deacons. It's early, the church is still in its early stages. People haven't even been scattered yet. There's still revelation that's going to be revealed and structure that's going to be supported and implemented. This is earlier on. So in Acts chapter 6, verse 1, now in these days when the disciples were increasing in number, a complaint by the Hellenists arose against the Hebrews because their widows were being neglected in the daily distribution. And the 12 summoned the full number of the disciples and said, it is not right that we should give up preaching the word of God to serve tables. Therefore, brothers, pick out from among you 7 men of good repute, full of the Spirit and of wisdom, whom we will appoint to this duty. But we will devote ourselves to prayer and to the ministry of the word. And what they said pleased the whole gathering, and they chose Stephen. Okay, and then they got all the 7 guys that they select, and they lay hands on them. So you've heard this before. You got the Hellenists, which are just, they're okay. These are Greek-speaking Jews, but they live out in the dispersion. They live outside of Jerusalem. And what that means is that they have more Greek influence. They speak the Greek language, and they're going to have some of that. And I want to be careful about this. I was reading some information. Some were not to think that they were to the point to where they were sinful, because some of them went full Greek life. So that's too far. But they were Jews who were definitely influenced by Greek culture. So this isn't, and actually, I'm even thinking in the past, I need to correct my wording. This isn't a race issue as much as it is a cultural issue within the church. And so what happens is that as everyone's been selling and providing for the congregation and the distributing that, they're finding out that the Hellenist widows are being neglected in this. And so obviously there's a complaint from the Hellenists. Okay? The 12 apostles evaluate and confirm, and their focus is not going to be on serving tables. So here's what's happened. Of course, these are apostles, but for us, where we're at is that the shepherds asked for feedback. Y'all gave them feedback. They're evaluating, and they say not everything holds the same weight, but there are some things that hold weight, and we are actually recommending that you look at this. That you may need some they're recommending a need. Okay? Because what they said is, our hands are off of this. And that's in harmony with what we know shepherds are about. Whether that's 1 Timothy 3, whether that's Acts 20, 1 Peter 5, so on and so forth. Okay. This is interesting. They pick seven men. That's what they're saying. Pick seven men from among you that are character driven. Brethren, if I may, this is before they're laying hands on them. So when we're talking about them of being good reputation, full of the Spirit, full of wisdom, in other words, they're saying that's who they are right now. Does this sound familiar with something we just studied? The apostles are going to focus on the prayer and teaching. The people are going to choose. Do you see that? And the apostles are going to approve or appoint them. So here we are. Take note of their need. What was the need of the saints there? I know. So, Kyle, is this a small thing, or given the full context, is this a pretty meaty issue? And why would you need men who are qualified to handle this situation? What have they got in front of them here? Is this an easy situation, or could this get a little dicey? Thank you. Kelly?
Say that given the fact that they were Hellenists, there may have been some, for lack of a better statement, cultural and maybe racial tension between non-Hellenist Jews and Christians. And the Hellenist brothers and sisters spoke Greek. A sound, mature Christian is going to be a good need to navigate that and make sure that they explain to their Jewish brethren who are not Hellenists, you need to treat these women as sisters.
I mean, because there's a possibility that when the apostles are away, I mean, I want you to think about that. Just because the apostles come in and say this isn't good, they need to be taken care of, doesn't mean you've converted everyone. It doesn't mean that everyone agrees with it. So imagine the apostles go away and now the deacons are there and you've got issues and questions and can I even say this? Is there a sense in which these guys had authority?
Yes.
I mean, I just want us to dig into this. Why seven men? And again, what the focus is on the character. Can we agree with that? They didn't say, hey, I think we've got a few that have dealt with mass neglect. They said, we need men that we can trust. What's the seven about, do you think?
They could say no.
Say that again?
They could say no.
Yes, sir.
That's why they need seven, because if they all say no, they're good, trustworthy men. They said no.
Is there another reason why you think they could have picked seven?
Strength in numbers.
Okay. Okay.
Maybe that's something they needed to get the job done.
And it could, right? It could be a few factors in here. I would assume a lot of that they're figuring out how many guys you think we need for the work. Is that fair also to think about? May not be a bad thing for us to think about as well. How much work are we talking about? How much help do we think we need? I mean, I'm sharing with you the fruits of my studies, and here's what I'm seeing about this. The apostles were hands off the distribution. It's not like this. Well, in the church, if you want to be a shepherd one day, first you've got to be a deacon. No, a deacon actually has its own independent role, and the shepherds have their own independent role. Good shepherds will not micromanage the deacons. Well, what happens if the deacons start flubbing it up? They'll figure it out. They can figure it out. I'm not saying there never has to be any communication. But guys, in that situation, they're not coming back and be, you know, and like, okay, hey, Peter, I mean, I believe in you, but I just want to make sure. Did you make sure to call? Blah, blah, blah. It's like, let me do my work. Let me do my work here. Not saying that these guys can't communicate. Really what I'm trying to stress is that I'm afraid that many times we have set the bar so low about the deacons that we're not appreciating them for who they are and what they could do. Does that make sense? That's more than anything what I'm trying to communicate here. Yes, sir. Yes. That could have, you know, maybe that's why it was an odd number. You know, maybe it was an odd number there. She was just going back to the idea of maybe seven, because if there was a, if they're in a split decision situation, you got one that can.
The apostles were hands off in the distribution, right? How was it being done before?
Well,
maybe that's why they need to have something in place, because not just the trustworthiness, things like that. Maybe the organization just wasn't in place for it to be that widespread.
I got to tell you, I've that seems to have been a stressful situation. And you know what's funny about that? You remember old Moses? At the beginning, he was trying to get it all done. And who was it that said, "You're crazy"? Jethro came in and said, "You can't be doing this, man." And so I'd imagine this was super helpful. And this may have been the straw that broke the camel's back. When they're finally like, "Listen, we can't do this anymore. You guys pick it and get it done." Is it reasonable to... Yes, sir. Here's what I would say. We're picking competent men. If you don't think they're competent, don't get them in the role. Because if you got to go to an elder and be like, "Can I buy this light bulb?" That's a problem.
No, it's not. You won't get an answer.
You won't get an answer. And I love that, guys. I'm not trying to insert a spirit of, I'm not talking about a spirit of rebellion. I'm talking about they're competent men that had work to do. An elder is not a deacon. A deacon is not an elder. Of course they're going to work. I mean, guys, of course they're going to work together. Of course, if there's something meaty enough, these guys are going to go. Because, by the way, that's the kind of guys they are. Yes, they're wise. Really, you're picking up what I'm throwing down here. We've not done a good job in the body with deacons. Even then, we say, "Well, our elders are deacons. Our deacons are what?" I'm like, even our elders aren't deacons many times, because even the elders are deacon doing deacons' roles that really even deacons shouldn't be doing.
Question.
Yes, sir.
So in Romans 61, it talks about Phoebe.
Yeah.
Phoebe and Prince.
Yes. Right.
That's right. So she's called a servant there. That servant is deaconess.
Right.
It is the very word. So is she a wife, or is she straight up a deaconess?
I just think we're making too much out of it, because he uses that term "serve" all the time, and depending if you're dealing with a male or female.
But
and so.
Of the church of. So
yeah.
If
so.
You, if you put that on the, if you put that appellation on the word, there's no doubt it's talking about an office.
I don't think so. I think we're making way too much. Let me illustrate this. If I were to say, "I commend to you our sister Crystal, a servant of the church at North Collin," all of us would be like, "Yep, we know her." I'm not persuaded by that. And so when we're looking at the qualifications, it is clearly, and guys, I want to go, so I'm going to say a couple things about this. It's male driven. He picks 12 men, but men. And whenever in Acts 6, they choose seven men. Okay, so We are all servants, and I will say this. I think, and this is where you can hit me, but I don't think there's anything wrong with deacons getting involved and saying, okay, this is primarily what we're doing. We see some other needs, and we're going to help coordinate that. And they go to women and ask them to help out. I don't think there's any issue with that.
Well, what I'm trying to get at, though, is you call the wife the deaconess, and that gets to the identity you were talking about at the beginning.
I'm sorry. I mean, well, so
that's what I was asking.
I think you said it was an office, though, and that I disagree with.
But I'm getting to the point of understanding that if you're a deacon, your wife is a deaconess. That is the office. It's two of you. So
I don't think that the wife holds authority. I don't think the wife can come into that situation. I think a deacon in Acts chapter 6 could have come and said, we're doing it this way, this way, this way. If his wife would have stepped in and said, that's right, he's gone, but I'm speaking on behalf of him, but said, no. And so there, it's important because there is a role that people are stepping into. And I think, by the way, that the elders need to have a wife. In other words, what I think was true with the deacon is going to be true of the wife. Because we're dealing in very clear principles. But I love them to death, Lawana and Katie. But if Lawana and Katie got up and started trying to speak to the congregation with authority, we would have issues. Hopefully we would deal with that kindly and lovingly, but we would have issues. Yes, sir.
Yeah, you mentioned the idea that their deacons do hold a position of authority because when they were appointed, oversee is the idea. But there are many servants.
Yes.
In the position of overseeing.
And that's why I want you guys to hear me clearly, the balancing out. Not from the official standpoint, but yes, and back to that one angle, Eric, yes, the wives are mentioned in 1 Timothy 3 because they are in practicality going to be support of those men, and they can hinder or help their work. I'm just simply trying to make the point, though, but we are looking at the men in this official position. I wanted to plug this. I know we're almost out of time. The deacons are, well, let me put it this way. The elders are to teach. That's the only thing in 1 Timothy 3 that we find out that they do. I understand that it doesn't mention that at all in 1 Timothy 3 about the deacons. But can we take note of how these men that they chose in Acts chapter 6 also have the ability to preach the word? If you're full of the Spirit, that means that God's word is dwelling in you. It means that it's become implanted. You're wise because the Spirit is leading you. You cannot follow what you do not know. This is just my commentary. Deacons need to be competent in the word. They don't need to be new converts either, I don't believe. They need time to have known the word, for the word to transform them, and the ability to learn how to exercise what they've learned. This was Tim Jennings, because I wanted to quote it verbatim. He had a lot of cool things to say. I went back and listened to one of his classes. He gave what I would call just a master class on 1 Timothy 3. He talked about how the highest position in the kingdom is a servant. He talked about how, and Tim's known for, he does a good job on equipping guys and equipping deacons. And he tells them, like, listen, you guys are chosen, but there's work to be done, and we want you to facilitate that, and we want you to get people involved. And this one in particular, deacons are not chosen to do all the work of the church, but model for the church the work we must do. We're done. Guys, I'm sorry. I've been going over this week trying to get all this in. Is there anything, like, really important, though, that anyone needs to say or a question that they have?
I think that's
All right, thank you so much. What now? Again, elders will get back with this. They'll circle back to it. Just be thinking about these things. Any other thoughts or comments?
Yeah, we do. Want everybody to start thinking about them, thinking about men, that you think they'd be qualified to serve this way. Who else? Right now, we want it to be on your mind, in prayer life, and then we'll do some follow-up.
Okay. Miss Maria? Yes.
Yes, I've been thinking that these men, instead of being nominated, they should speak out and say, I want to serve. Because we can nominate anyone, but what if they don't want to do it? They're just doing it because we're kind of pushing them.
And I think what we'll do, I think it's fair to say this, it'll be part of the process. We would never select someone without going to them and asking them. And so you're right on about that, sister. We want to make sure that they want to do the work. So thank you. Because we don't want to embarrass them and put them in an awkward position as well. So thank you so much.
Yeah, this is not an election. We're not looking at votes. We're looking at feedback from you. Because you first said we think there's a need. Okay, if there's a need, then we need men to be involved in this. So Billy and I are going to be very much involved in that, working with Sean as well, because we see there's some teaching in Titus about the evangelist having some role in these kind of things. And so more information, much more information.
All right. Thank you, guys. Oh, Kyle, yes, sir. I would like, for me, for example, in Acts 20 and 1 Peter 5, whenever he's talking about a shepherding the flock among you, that's going to include everyone outside of that. And if I can, so it's a good question, right? So we're seeing other passages that are showing us more of the pattern and how that worked. And so we're formulating what I think is a clear concept that those men in particular were the overall authority of everyone. And I will say too, if I can really quickly, that is why our priority at North Collin was to get elders in play. We see in that one that elders were commanded to be appointed. Interesting, we don't see that with deacons. Deacons we see later on, and I think it came from a practicality of the need. In other words, God's saying it's good that we have that need, but let's get guys that are qualified to do it. And so we're going to those other principles. Therefore, while they have a specific role, we're all under the leadership of the shepherds. And I really appreciate that question. Thank you.